Thank you very much. Good morning, everyone. And really, thank you to your entire gathering for the opportunity to share with your fellowship some thoughts about this powerful film, 50 Children. I know that many of you have had the opportunity to see the film. I understand some of you have not been able to see it. I will just say in a few sentences what the film is about. An American Jewish couple living in Philadelphia in late 1938 read about the violence being perpetrated against Jews in Nazi Germany. And they decided that they wanted to do something about it. They were members of an organization called Brith Shalom, a fellowship very much like the one that you have, where all the members said, if you decide to do something, we'll be here for you to back you up. I just give that as background. The couple, Gilbert and Eleanor Krauss, left their children behind in Philadelphia and traveled to Nazi Germany. Not a very safe place for Jews in that period. They set as their goal helping 50 Jewish children escape the violence that they and their families were suffering at that time. They really didn't know when they went to Germany how they were going to do it. They didn't know how to identify the children. They didn't know if the parents of the children would be comfortable sending their children to safety, but of course away from the family. And they didn't know whether the United States, our wonderful country, would let those children in if they managed to get them out of Nazi Germany. At the end of the day, they were able to find the children. And at the end of the day, two American diplomats, one in Germany and one in Washington, who had both been diplomats in Nazi Germany, agreed to help find a way around the official American policy of denying admission to refugees from Europe who were seeking to escape with their lives from the tyranny of Nazi Germany. The mechanism that they found, I'll say something about in a moment. So I'm hoping that those of you who have seen the film recognize that as the general story, and those of you who have not seen the film will be encouraged by my remarks to have a look. So let me talk about significance. The statistics of the Holocaust are really overwhelming. 6 million Jews were murdered in the space of just a few years. In Europe, the heartland of Christianity, and the most civilized part of the world at that point in time, by all the measures that we as Westerners use to measure civilization. So 6 million Jews are murdered. In just one place, think about it, just at Auschwitz, 1.3 million people were murdered. In that one spot, of those 1.3 million, 1.1 million were Jews. And think about the staggering number of people who perpetrated those crimes. Germans and collaborators of the Germans in virtually every European country. And then think about the millions of people across Europe who stood by silently as the crime was being committed. They showed us in a way that we all try to acknowledge that to be a bystander in the presence of evil isn't neutral. It's not doing nothing. If you're a bystander in the face of injustice, it really empowers the evildoer to do what he or she is doing. So you have those huge numbers of victims and huge numbers of killers. And by contrast, the number of rescuers was really tiny. It took courage, generally based on a deep sense of personal morality, to stand against the tide and to attempt to help someone whose rights were being torn to shreds. Of course, it was risky to attempt to help. But it also demonstrated, and I think here is a key lesson of the film that some of you have seen, 50 Children, it demonstrated the possibility of human beings achieving their highest potential. After all, history shows us that all human beings can be killers. We have to acknowledge that. History shows us that every group of human beings can be persecuted at some point in time. History shows us that most of us, when something is happening to someone else and not to us, most of us choose silence. If it's not us, it's them. Okay, it's not my affair. We've heard it, and probably each of us has acted that way at some point in our lives. But the rescuers also demonstrate that human beings have that amazing potential to help people, to help others in need, to help people that they don't even know. That's what the Krauses did in the 50 Children film, to take in the children of people that they never met. That is something uniquely human. Stories about rescuers, and this film is a story of rescue. Stories about rescuers are much more difficult to learn about than stories about the killers. Why? Rescuers didn't rescue to get recognition. They rescued because they were driven by their internal set of values. No matter who you ask, from the most sophisticated diplomat to the poorest peasant who took in a Jewish refugee during the Holocaust, why did you do it? The most common answer is, there was nothing else I could do. This was the only thing I could do. I was driven to do it. I wouldn't live with myself if I hadn't done it. So rescuers didn't seek recognition. They didn't get recognition. It was also risky to be a rescuer. If you were a rescuer during World War II, you put your life at risk because the Nazis and their allies would see you as part of the problem. And even after the war ended, it was not popular to be a rescuer. Why? If you helped someone, how did your neighbors feel? They did nothing. So you demonstrated that it was possible to do something, and they didn't. Also, if you saved someone's life, that person might tell the true story of what happened in the community where they lived. That was not something that the general population wanted. So again, rescuers were seen in a negative way. They made it possible to know the truth. And for some people, even the idea that a saved Jew might return to their town and try to live again in their own home when the home had been taken over by someone else in the town, that didn't make rescuers popular either. So most rescuers, with all those risks, when the war was over, they just returned to their normal lives. And they didn't tell people what they had done. And most often, they didn't tell their own families even. And that brings me to the story of Gilbert and Eleanor Krauss, of the 50 Children film. How did it happen that such a powerful film was only made 70 years after the events, when all the players, the Krausses themselves, were long dead? How did it happen? It was a forgotten story. Gilbert and Eleanor Krauss didn't tell their families about what they had done. So what happened? I was sitting in my office at the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum one day, and a couple came in with a typed set of pages in their hand, signed on the last page by Eleanor Krauss, this woman who had gone off to Germany with her husband to rescue children. The husband in the couple was a grandchild of the Krausses. His mother had died. And in going through her boxes left in the attic, he found these pieces of paper that told the story of the grandparents going to Germany to save children. And his question as he sat in my office was, is this true? Or is my grandmother writing stories? And this was a story. He had never heard this story before. So what does a scholar do? You remember from the introduction, I was director of a scholar center, of a research center. Okay, the first thing we tried to find out, was this real or was this fiction? So we went to the archives of the State Department to see if there was any record, any document relating to the people who became involved in this story at the State Department that related to this particular incident that would demonstrate that these 50 children actually got visas to enter the United States. And lo and behold, there was a trace of this there. We went to Vienna, which is where the children were from. Remember, Austria in the World War II years was part of Nazi Germany. And in the document collections of the Jewish community of Vienna, we found lists of names of children whose parents had come to the community office and said, if it's possible to get my child out, I want my child on that list. And that way we were able to know the names of the 50 children. We went to the synagogue that now has the records of that Brit Shalom Fellowship that I mentioned. And lo and behold, one could find there pieces of paper that said, yes, this family took in this child. That family in our group took in that child. That family took in two children. So, and with all that information, we were able to find some of the surviving actual children who in 1939 came to the United States. Their lives were saved by the action of this couple. We know because we were able to trace the other children on the list who couldn't be included in the 50, Those children were murdered at Auschwitz. So this story is really a story of life and death, and a story totally lost, except for the fact that a grandchild found this document in a box of things that his mother had tossed in the attic at some point in time to be forgotten. So what strikes me most in this kind of story? A few things. First, how quintessentially American the story is. After all, we usually think Holocaust, we think that's something far away on another continent, doesn't really relate to us. We didn't have much to do with it. But think about this, the Krauses, this American couple, relying on a typically American voluntary association, voluntary fellowship, to back them up if they succeeded. This couple showing independence of thought because they were told by everyone, don't do it. You'll go off, you'll be killed. Your children will be orphans. Don't go off, you won't succeed. The State Department is not going to support you if you actually manage to find these children. They were told by every organization in the United States, don't do it. They were driven by independent thinking, individual initiative, and persistence that we Americans really consider to be our national virtues when we look at the rest of the world. Those are exactly the values that this story brings out. The story is also quintessentially American because it is a reminder that American policy in that period of time, America firstism, isolationism, and anti-immigration sentiment prevented thousands, tens of thousands, potentially millions of people who might have been saved from murder at the hands of the Nazis, who might have contributed to our country's greatness over time. American policy said, keep them out. State Department policy was rigidly, keep them out. You do not even bring in a baby, because someday that baby might take the job that my baby grandchild should have. That was American policy at the time. So the Americanness of the story is very powerful. Also, how much details can make a difference in history. The fact that Raymond Geis, those of you who have seen the film will recognize the names, and George Messerschmidt, two State Department professionals, had served together in Nazi Germany, sensitized these two people to the persecution of Jews that was taking place at the hands of the Nazis. They trusted one another because they had worked together. Think about the many times that you've tried to do something. Who do you call? You call your friends, you call your close associates, you call your business partner, you call your family members, people with whom you have a shared experience. They trusted each other, and they trusted each other enough to find a way around the State Department's absolute prohibition about allowing refugees from Nazi Germany to enter the United States. It's a detail that they served together for a brief period of time in Germany. And yet those two people become key actors in finding visas for those children. And then there is the smallest of detail, Gilbert Krauss discovers that visas that have been issued to Germans to come to the United States have not been picked up at the American embassy. Why? Well, sometimes those people found another way out of Germany before their American visa was approved. Sometimes the people had been deported and murdered before their American visa was approved. The standard waiting time during the war was over 10 years to get an American visa. So there were visas that had been issued to someone but never retrieved. And Gilbert Krauss came forward with the idea, well, cross out the name of the first person you gave this visa number to and put one of these children's names on that visa number. It keeps the number of visas within what was legal because no one was trying to break the law here. But if he hadn't discovered that, I'm not sure that any of those children would ever have come to the U.S. So the power of detail is very strong. And then the last thing that really impresses me in the film is how effectively it bursts some of the myths that are told about the Holocaust and that have persisted for decades. Mainly those myths exist because it makes it easier for us today to think about that history. Those myths also make it more difficult to actually confront the truth of the past. And every country has myths. In France, the biggest myth from the Holocaust period is that every Frenchman was in the resistance. It's not true. France became a collaborationist country during the war. In the Netherlands, the myth that everyone wants to hold on to was that every Dutch couple was hiding someone like Anne Frank in their attic, because the story of Anne Frank is so powerful. But it's not true. It was the Dutch civil service that identified where the Jews lived. It was the Dutch police who had arrested the Jews and turned them over to the Germans. So myths can really take you down a wrong path, a misleading path. Well, in the U.S., what are our mythologies about the Holocaust? First, we often say, well, we didn't know what was happening. Because surely if we knew what was happening, Americans and the American government would have done the right thing. Gilbert and Eleanor Krauss, the rescuers in this story, they were not CIA officers. They were not intelligence officials. They were reading American newspapers, where news about the Holocaust was on the front page of newspapers all across the country. The only thing that Gilbert and Eleanor Krauss did, that most Americans didn't do, was open their eyes and be willing to accept the facts that were being laid in front of them. They chose not to shut their eyes. Another myth you often hear is that no one could foresee that the persecution of Jews taking place in Germany and other countries in Europe would end up in mass murder. Well, those two diplomats, Gilbert Krauss and George Messerschmitt, were writing to one another private letters in which they both were asserting that the end point in Germany was going to be the murder of European Jews. They didn't send those letters through official State Department channels, because if they had done that, the way the State Department works, many people would have seen copies of those letters, and it would have stopped the process of reusing those visas. They carried on a private correspondence, which you can still see in their personal papers, which they deposited at their local universities. So people could see, people did understand that the potential for mass murder was there. It's just that people didn't want to understand. And surely the 100 Jewish families in Vienna that brought their children forward and said, take my child, because if my child is here, my child is going to die. They understood that mass murder was on the agenda as well. Lastly, I would say the most comforting myth of all, the myth that everyone in the world would like, makes no difference what country, the myth that there was nothing that we could do. Nothing that we could do. Well, we know that in the face of injustice, of persecution, of the denial of rights, if you do nothing, you've simply encouraged the people who are committing those crimes to continue. And in fact, there is always something you can do. The Krauses did what they did. I mean, just imagine leaving your children behind and going off to a place where you yourself were at risk of dying. So there's always something you can do. You have to accept that there might be risk involved. You have to accept that it might not be popular. And you have to accept that there's a possibility of failure. But if the statistics that I began with had been reversed, that there were millions of rescuers and far fewer perpetrators and killers, well, then millions of lives would have been saved. And we would be spared now, almost a century after those events, we would be spared the agony of dealing with the reality that human beings like us did those deeds in the middle of the 20th century, and human beings like us did nothing about it. So this is a film. It's the truth. It pushes us to search deep inside. Where are we in that panoply of human potentials?